everybody. Bill Buckmaster back in the saddle with you again. On the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks. Tom, today, Thursday, January the 6th. Really, this is the one-year anniversary, of course, of the U.S. Capitol riot. Also, this is the official end of the Christmas season. This is, you know, the old thing, Tom, about the 12 days of Christmas. Well, January 6th is known as Three Kings Day, and the Russian Orthodox Church actually observes Christmas, Tom, today. So the holiday season has been very instructive.
This is news to me. Thank you.
And some other news that you already know about. We continue. This is anniversary week here on the Buckmaster Show. So proud of the fact that this is the start of year 12 of our radio show and the start of my 34th year on television and radio here in Tucson. Buckmaster Show broadcasting from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. The radio station is 1030, Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Call letters are KVOI, like K-Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and KVOI.com. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's welcome now Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. Steve is the lone Republican on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors. His district, he represents the supervisorial district number 4. Steve, how was your holiday?
Oh, it was terrific. It was well-spent, family and all of the fixings that go along with it, and it was wonderful. Thank you for asking.
Do you think you gained a few pounds?
I kind of kept steady, but I had to watch myself. I really did, because it's very easy to creep up, as everybody knows.
Oh, yeah, all the cookies and all the goodies. All right, let's begin with the situation. There's just a couple of meetings now in a row. Supervisor Christie and Supervisor Hines have been butting heads over this whole COVID-19 issue. Supervisor Hines, along with being a Democrat supervisor, he is a medical doctor. He works at Tucson Medical Center as what they call a hospitalist. And he laid into you. He complained that you're exposing junk science. What about this? What's going on between you and Supervisor Hines?
Well, quite frankly, I have no problem with a good, robust debate, and I encourage it, and I enjoy it. Dr. Hines has taken it, I think, to a different level, which is fine, too. I don't know what he's referring to about me espousing junk science. I am not an epidemiologist. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't know anything about science, and I don't believe I've ever made any statements relating to that topic. So I'm quite, taken aback by him saying that I espouse junk science when I have no idea what he's talking about. The other issue, too, is that he's brought up that perhaps I'm not in favor of vaccinations, and that nothing could be further than the truth. I'm a poster boy for vaccinations. I've got the pneumonia vaccination, the shingles vaccination,
influenza.
I just had my flu shot.
Fully vaxxed. You're fully vaxxed with COVID.
COVID. I don't know what he's referring to at that juncture, but I certainly have never told anybody not to get vaxxed. On the other hand, I think that when you have the opportunity to be vaccinated, you should. So his statements, I think, are rather irresponsible, and he's kind of flailing away at a lot of issues that don't exist, making straw men arguments that, again, don't exist. It is rather troubling to see somebody in his profession react so emotionally and so out of control on the topic. I question, would he have the bedside manner that I'd want to have as a patient, if he's going to react this way so in such a flailing manner that he does in the board meetings. So it's troubling, but certainly, you know, Bill, I always say I was in the car business for 30 years, and there's nothing that I've been called or haven't heard before. As a matter of fact, It was interesting because at Tuesday's board meeting, I hadn't been talked like that since I was in the car business, and I told a customer what his trade-in was worth. So,
whoa. And I'm sure you did get there were occasional people that really went off the handle at the showroom.
Sure.
that said that they didn't they felt the deal.
Well, the point I'm saying is that he can say all he wants, and it really has no effect on me. And I'd be glad to discuss anything that he wants to discuss. And I just would hope that he would keep it on a much more rational plane than what we saw on Tuesday.
I think generally from what, and he will be, he's on our show regularly, and he'll be on here in a couple of weeks. But from what I understand, he's accusing you of generally downplaying the outbreak.
I would put it the other way, that saying he is acting in a manner that people might characterize as a hair on fire issue with the COVID situation, particularly when we find out that the hospitalizations that he's referring to so much, are they characterized as the patients being there because of COVID or with COVID? And
yes, because everyone who comes to the hospital, the first thing that they administer a COVID test,
and rightly so,
to anybody who comes to the hospital. In fact, one of the problems, Steve Christie, that's the emergency rooms around the country are having, people are going to the emergency room just because they want a test.
Yeah.
So that's not helping the situation.
No, and I think this is indicative of the healthcare system. Many people in our community and in all communities utilize the emergency room as their primary care
That's
source.
True. And that is true.
This, of course, backlogs the ability to deal with more serious issues as well. So, you know, there's a lot of issues about hospitalizations and record keeping and COVID characterizations. Are they there because of COVID or with COVID? Did someone pass away because of COVID, or did they pass away having COVID but other items that cause their demise as well? So he doesn't like the fact that I call these into question, as if I'm not allowed to question things. And for some reason, whenever I do question them or anybody contradicts what his narrative is, he gets highly emotional and highly irrational. And if he doesn't like what people have to say, then he shouldn't make statements that provoke people to say things.
So we had over 400, and I think it was 427 county workers about a month ago who were possibly in line to lose their jobs over the vaccine mandate. That has now is down to really now a couple of dozen. Well, not a couple of dozen. 51 Pima County workers are facing firing for not complying with the vaccination policy.
Yeah, and this has been very concerning to me as well, particularly in our law enforcement community. We've had an acute shortage of law enforcement officers, both in the corrections area in our jail system and our deputies on the street. And that shortage, that leakage of qualified, experienced, dedicated law enforcement officers is hard to replace. It's hard to maintain. It's hard to recruit and track. I know a lot about recruiting, training, culturing, maintaining a workforce, and how expensive it is, both in time, effort, and energy, and in money. And to, I think, very cavalierly throw away all of the effort and all of the expense involved in training qualified individuals to protect us in the manner that the county and the sheriff's department has done, is irresponsible and a very misguided attempt at misuse of resources. I've always maintained in both the deputy situation and particularly in the corrections officers situation, if there was a riot in the jail, is it better to have an experienced, career-minded, professional corrections officer there to protect the public and to quell the situation, or who may or may not be vaccinated, or is it better not to have any corrections officer there at all? And that's the overarching question that we as a community have to face on this.
All right, Steve Christie, let's take a break. You know what I want to talk about right now.
Sure.
You know.
That's why you talked about pounds.
Oh, you bet. Mona's Danish Bakery, they're open right now for lunch. What a great holiday season Steve and the team had at Mona's, just turning out pumpkin pies in record numbers over Thanksgiving. Then there came Christmas holidays. Steve, people wanted the Danish Kringle over the holidays, a great way to start Christmas morning or Christmas Eve. And it was just a great season. But it doesn't end now. This would be a great opportunity to go up. They're open right now for lunch, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Stop by, have lunch, and then for dessert, what about one of those lovely, oh my goodness, they're good, Steve, the chocolate brownies. With the very thick chocolate icing there. Boy, that's a nice way to get you going into your afternoon. anyway, Mona's Danish Bakery, their website's monasdanishbakery.com. They're open, as I say, for lunch, northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. We'll be back with Steve Christie in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. Anniversary week continues on the Buckmaster Show. Year 12 already upon us here for Buckmaster Radio. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village, our live line village studios. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie, District 4. The lone Republican on the five-member Pima County Board of Supervisors is with me in studio. And speaking of the live line, let's go to caller Matt, who has a question. And actually, it's very timely, and I didn't plan it this way, Matt, but this was my next topic with Supervisor Christie. You want to talk about the RTA?
Yeah, you know, the city and the county have had some issues as of late over multiple things, including PAYGO and of course, differential water rates. This seems to be the next thing brewing. I think you had Steve Kozacik on yesterday who brought it up as well. I was curious if Supervisor Christie, Steve, do you have any thoughts about the timelines for RTA discussions with the city? And is this going to turn into another brouhaha between the city and the county? Thank you.
Well, I think it's already turned into a brouhaha as it is right now. Of course, the RTA is very near and dear to my heart. I served on the original Citizens Advisory Committee in 2005 and 2006, and I was very instrumental in forming the final plan that went to the voters for approval in 2006. I've also served as chair of the RTA and as a member of the Pima Association of Governments, and I've been intimately aware of it during that time period over a span of some 5 years, in addition to serving on the State Transportation Board. So this, I think, is something that's been a great asset to our community. There's been all these years since 2006 of hundreds of projects that have done amazing things as far as providing better access through our community, either through transit and particularly through the relieving congestion and improving so many roadways and infrastructure. So it's very concerning to me to see the arguments that are being postured and forwarded by the city that they're not getting the freedom of the representation that is being afforded to them on many different levels. And I can't remember the exact percentages, but some 62% of all projects have gone to the city. And in the next few years remaining till the end of the original RTA plan,
which is about 5 years,
the city's getting some 92% of all the income as well as major projects. And it just seems to me that their approach, for whatever reason, is not only disruptive and wrong, but it's going to severely damage the great work that the RTA has done over the many years since 2006, and will impede any kind of progress going to be on the forefront for the renewal. And again, there's a concerted effort, it seems, and I can't really pull any punches on this, that the city of Tucson is bullying its way, shoving and elbowing and kneeing everybody to get what they want, or what they conceive of what they want, which is not in line with what the community wants. And it's very distressing. They as you pointed out, Matt, they're talking about the PAYGO system, which is a
pay-as-you-go,
an historic way of maintaining and reconstructing and remediating our horrific unincorporated roads. It's doing phenomenally on that. They're imposing these differential water rates that are unjust, and the county is, and rightly so, suing them. And I say sue the hell out of the city over this. And on top of that, they want to pick up their marbles and leave the playground with PAYGO. And in order to make up for that loss, they're going to raise more taxes for city residents to do their own work. It makes no sense to me, and to me is a very misguided and irresponsible attempt, for whatever reason, power or prestige or whatever, to do what the mayor and council are trying to do, and it is certainly not in line with the best interests of our region, of our county, of collaboration, and working together with all the jurisdictions.
Let's go back to the live line. Doug Martin calling of Good News Communications Public Relations. Doug, how are you?
Good afternoon, Bill. I'm glad to see you're recovering and your physical therapy is going good.
Thank you.
And also, I just really appreciate you, Steve, sitting on the supervisor board and, you know, being a 1-4. And I liked your Christmas card, too. I didn't know you rode horses, so that was should call you cowboy, I guess, now. But I did have a question just about how you're working together with the other supervisors. I've noticed that at sometimes Rex Scott and you have voted together. You actually, I think, also had a 3 vote on the water issue. So I thought I'd like to see you just comment on how you can work with the other members and if you have a good relationship with some of them or what you can do as a 1-4.
Well, thanks, Doug. It's great to talk to you, and I'm glad you're doing well, and I only wish you and Mary the best. You've been good friends for many years, and thank you for calling. I'm always open to trying to find some kind of a way to get the votes necessary to forward a position, and certainly Supervisor Scott and Chair Bronson, there have been several occasions where the three of us have voted the same way. I think it has a lot to do with the makeup of in particular, Supervisor Scott's district. I think it's more in line of the constituents that I have in my district, and we share a lot of the same concerns that our constituents do. There's really not opportunity because of things like open meeting laws for us to meet outside of the board environment because it would be in violation. But I can't really specify how these opportunities arise, but when they do arise, I certainly try to capitalize on them. And when I recognize that there is some areas that we can get together and approach the same pathway, I'm going to take them. And I commend Supervisor Scott, and I do commend Chair Bronson for allowing those opportunities to encourage the three of us to vote correctly and in the same manner. And let's hope there's other opportunities to do that too. But I wasn't elected, I think, to collaborate. I don't think I was elected to reach across the aisle. Not that I'm opposed to either one of those things. I was elected to represent my constituents and what I believe they want me to stand for. And I've done my best to stand for what they want me to. And it's a unique position to be the only Republican. It does give me a platform to be able to express my point of view and my district's point of view, because they can, the media, if they ever do any kind of reporting on it, they can go to any one of my four colleagues and get basically the same response to any kind of an issue. But having done that, they always say, now let's go over to the lone Republican and see what the opposition has to say. So it's given me a good platform that I don't think I otherwise would have had if I were in the majority.
Yeah, because if they want two sides of the story, they've got to go to you.
And I'm it.
You are it. Getting back to RTA, what is your hope here? Next time we see you in February, there's going to have to be some movement, Steve Christie, here, one way or the other.
Well, there definitely has to be. And, you know, at the rate it's going, I wish I felt more positive. It seems like there's a lot of effort on the city's part to push things off, to defer decisions, to try to drag this thing on as long as they can. I guess that would allow them to get closer to a ballot initiative in the springtime that would raise taxes for or increase taxes, I should say, for road repairs, so they don't have to have anything to do with the RTA, which is, I think, a real travesty on the citizens of Tucson to have those taxes raised when there's always already a very fine and efficient effort in place with the RTA. But the clock is ticking, and I'm hoping that the PAG board as well as the RTA board, which of course is basically the same makeup, has a plan B. Because
I was just going to ask you about that.
There's got to be some kind
of... If the city decided to perhaps go away on their own on road issue, wouldn't there be some other way to kind of approach this?
There must be, and it should be explored and discussed. And quite frankly, that it may even turn out to be a better situation without the city of Tucson. So the city of Tucson's kind of banking on the fact that they're the ones controlling all the pool balls on the table. That may not be the case, and that may not be needed to have their involvement. And they're the ones that are going to lose out. But I think with the other jurisdictions on those boards, they need to explore a very followable and justifiable methodology that, okay, let's take into consideration the city's gone. Let's center on what we have left. And it might be a better plan altogether.
All right. Steve Christie, thank you very much. Hope the new year is off to a good start for you. It sounds like it. And we'll see.
I don't know if I've told you this before.
What is that, Steve?
I love being supervisor.
Is that right?
Have you heard that?
That's
before?
The first time I have heard
this
Steve
year.
This year. First time this year hearing Steve Christie saying he very much loves being a Pima County supervisor. Well, we love doing the radio show, and we're going to take a break right here. We will be back with famed comet discoverer David Levy.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We love Green Things. Green Things on a 13-acre site. They've been in business 51 years. The 13-acre site is a beautiful piece of property at 3384 East River Road. It's right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and they just have just about everything you can imagine for your garden and your home as well. Some beautiful items. They call it Zocalo Village. Those items, many of them handcrafted in Mexico, Latin America, and Europe, like that dining room set that I saw there made out of mesquite wood. Beautiful. The website's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Green Things, our longtime friend here on the Buckmaster Show in our 12th year, start of our 12th year of the radio show this week, and my 34th year in television and radio in Tucson, beginning this week, all started. Joining us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dr. David Levy, who is our contributor on science, the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of, and the founder of Sharing the Sky Educational Science Organization. He's one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, discovering 23 comets, including his co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter in 1994, producing the most spectacular explosions ever witnessed in the solar system. David, how is the new year treating you, sir?
So far, so good, Bill, and it's really good to hear you. 34 years is an incredible career. I remember I was 34 years old about when I found my first comet. long time ago.
Well, if you take my service in broadcasting and communication before I came to Tucson in 1988, it's pushing like 54 years. So yeah. It's a long career, and thank goodness we continue the ride. Did you get a chance to take a look and get a pretty good look, David Levy, at Comet Leonard?
Yes, Bill Buckmaster, I have.
How'd it look?
I've looked at it, I think, about 6 or 7 nights. At first, it was just barely visible, pretty obvious, fuzzy, faint fuzzy going through the sky. But then it became a lot brighter. And then when it switched into the evening sky, Wendy and I got one look at it that was really pretty striking, with a lovely fan-shaped coma and a tail and everything. But the last night I saw it was, I think, 2 or 3 nights ago. But now it's too far south, and I had to say goodbye to it.
Are you doing comet searching at least 2 to 3 hours a night, David?
Well, yeah, either not so much lately because the weather has been so bad and so cold. But I did 2 hours about 3 nights ago. We went out to the Chiricahua Astronomy Complex site, and I did a beautiful night of observing. There's also been some interesting meteors. I saw 10 quadrantid meteors on the morning of the 3rd of January, and some meteors just a couple of nights ago from a different shower. But there's been quite a bit going on, and it's been been a pretty busy start to the year, Bill.
I know you're very excited about what's called the James Webb Space Telescope.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you. I happened to get up at 5 a.m. Christmas morning. The launching, I'm sure that the telescope did not even know it was being launched because the flight was so smooth. And what really surprised me is during powered flight, the protective casing fell off the rocket, exposing the full telescope.
Mm.
And for a second, I thought, oh, my, that's not supposed to happen. But then I thought it is supposed to happen. They're out of the atmosphere. They don't need the covering. They get a little extra oomph out of the booster that way. And it was going up in powered flight with the telescope sitting on top of it. It was wonderful. But, Bill, the best part of it was not the lunch. It was the NASA administrator's speech, where he talked about the many people that participated in the telescope's launch. And then he ended with one shepherd boy in the Middle East who looked up at the night sky, wrote a poem, and eventually became king of Israel from the 19th Psalm. I thought that really shook me. That was really wonderful.
It's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month. What do you have for us this week, David, or this month?
It's for an old quotation from Robert Record from the Castle of Knowledge, circa 1556. If reason's reach transcends the sky, why should it then to earth be bound? The wit is wronged and led awry if mind be married to the ground.
Good way to start the year with the David Levy quote.
Yeah.
Hey, David, I have a question for you. The moon is in the phase they call the waxing phase. Do you have any idea where that term comes from?
Well, you got me, Bill. I don't.
Oh.
Waxing, I'm sure, has something to do with growing.
Hmm.
So perhaps when a candle is, you're adding wax to it, you're thickening the candle. I know that the waning moon means it's getting less and less. That
sure.
comes after the full moon. But you are correct, my friend. The moon is waxing, and every night it will get bigger and brighter and more obvious in the sky.
And more difficult for you to do observing.
A little bit, yeah, but I love the moon. I love looking at it. There was someone who was staying with us for a while, and I was trying to get him into astronomy to get him to look at the moon. And I said, why don't you use this telescope to look at the moon? He said, oh, I've seen that. And I said, when I was a lot younger than you, I used a telescope to look at the moon for 3 years. And I mapped I mapped 300 craters, 26 mountain ranges and valleys. And it took me 3 years to do that. And you're saying that 1 second look at the moon is all you want? I've never forgiven him for that.
Worth a lot more. All right, Dr. David Levy. Thank you, David, and it's always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in February.
In February, and you have my phone number.
I do. Thank you, David.
Have a wonderful year, and visit a library, Bill, okay?
Okay. Thank
That's
you.
That's an important thing to do, especially in these times.
All right. Thanks, David.
Okay.
All right. The Buckmaster Show continues. We have attorney Don Luce coming up next. Boy, there is so much confusion over the vaccine mandates. Don Luce, our legal contributor, is waiting in the wings. He will be next.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It's the Buckmaster Show. Get a chance over the next couple of weeks. Take a road trip. I strongly recommend a trip over to Silver City. It's only about a three-hour drive. Get a nice kind of Four Seasons feel over there. Those of us that come from areas where we had Four Seasons, believe it or not, some people really miss the winter. Yeah, in the snow and all of that. I'm not saying you're going to get a lot of snow in Silver City, but you will get some more kind of wintry weather because it is a mile-high elevation. Same as Denver. As Silver City, about 5,000 feet, but it really is a great environment. I'm looking at the midday temperature, 58 degrees. That's perfect to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Put on your down vest and just get out there and do some hiking. Start your search for things to do and places to stay by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. We are joined in studio with attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group. Luce Law Group has offices in Tucson. Almost said Tunis, Tunisia. No, I don't think, Don, you're over in North Africa. You're in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor. He's the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. And both books are in their second printing. Don, how was your holiday season?
It was great, Bill. Thank you. And I hope yours was as well.
It was. It's great to kind of take a few days off. And we're back in the saddle here with our anniversary week. Don, we have talked about this vaccine mandate now. Well, the COVID's been going on nearly two full years, and we've been talking about all sorts of legal implications about vaccines in the workplace. Very interesting story out of California concerning a very well-known candy maker that is based in California.
Right, Bill. That's See's Candies, mm-hmm. and there is a lawsuit in California by a family who lost a husband and a father because he contracted COVID from his wife, who worked at See's Candies. Mm. And so she brought a wrongful death action on her behalf and on behalf of the children, claiming that the employer was responsible for the death of her husband because the employer failed to ensure safety in the workplace. And you and I have spoken before about the importance of employers making sure that they offer a safe workplace for their employees because of the pandemic and the ever-changing look that it brings. It's especially important that all employers be vigilant to make sure that their workplaces are safe. And OSHA, which is in charge of workplace safety, actually requires that. And as we might talk about in a little while, OSHA has even promulgated regulations regarding COVID vaccinations. But back to the California story. So the employer said, no, you can't bring a wrongful death suit against us. If you have a claim, it would be a workers' compensation claim. Hmm. And the Court of Appeals in California said no. Hmm. They cited a similar case over a hepatitis infection and said the claimants in this case are going to be permitted to maintain a wrongful death action against the employer on the allegation that the company failed to ensure safety in the workplace. So very interesting case, but an example of what I think we're going to see in terms of a changing legal landscape for people who either themselves become ill workplace exposure, or in this case, family members who become ill as a result of workplace exposure.
In Arizona, are there more protections than California regarding this?
I think so. In 2021, Arizona legislature sent to the governor hundreds of bills, over 400 of which were signed into law. One of them requires that employees who claim they got COVID due to the actions of their employers must prove that the employers acted with intentional misconduct or gross negligence. That's a very high bar. And if I might, I'd like to take just a second to explain what that means. I will start with ordinary negligence. So ordinary negligence is where a person fails to act as a prudent person would act under similar circumstances. Mm-hmm. Okay. Gross negligence is entirely different. It requires extreme indifference or reckless disregard for the safety of others. So I would suggest, and I think we've spoken about this on prior shows, it would be very difficult to establish that an employer acted with gross negligence. That bar is very high, and it would be, I can't even think of an example of where an employer would be shown to have acted with extreme indifference or reckless disregard for the safety of his or her employees. But I'm not saying it's not impossible. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to prove. So Arizona has a construct that is different than what we saw in the California case with the family that's suing See's Candies for wrongful death.
Let's talk a bit about where are we in the whole vaccine mandate story. This has gone to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, boy, it's a patchwork of cases and decisions on a nationwide basis. So let's start with the Biden administration's mandate that employers who have 100 or more employees are required to ensure that their employees are vaccinated. That actually is not enforceable currently.
No.
And the people who are challenging that are basically taking a three-tiered approach. They're saying, first, look, the vaccine mandates were imposed without proper public comment, so therefore they're not valid. Secondly, they weren't authorized by Congress. And thirdly, they infringe on states' rights to regulate public health matters. So we get back to that conflict that we've seen so many times where the federal government is enacting legislation that the states believe are uniquely theirs to act on, and the states are enacting legislation which the federal government says, no, you can't do that because of the preemption doctrine. In this case, courts have ruled that this mandate from the Biden administration ought to be put on hold until they have a chance to sort out the legal theories, which means that some employers are allowed to require vaccinations and some employers don't have to require vaccinations. The federal government, it seems, is allowed to require that healthcare workers be vaccinated.
Okay.
Now, it's interesting, at least in my mind, why that might be. And that's because healthcare providers, in large measure, receive Medicare and Medicaid benefits for the treatment that they render patients.
Okay.
And because they receive a federal benefit, federal law allows that they be required to have their workforces vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
That same concept isn't true with respect to private employers.
Right.
So healthcare workers, for the time being, can be required to be vaccinated. Workers at other businesses may be required to be vaccinated if their employer says that they have to be. But the federal government can't require, at least presently, their employer to require the vaccination. Mm-hmm. So that's the distinction.
Now, if you work for the federal government, i.e. the military or the postal service or directly work for the federal government, they're going to have a little more, they will, this mandate will have a little more gravitas than it will for just a private employer with over 100 employees.
Agreed. The vaccine mandates for federal government employees and military remain in effect. And also, don't forget, the mask requirements for airline passengers and people using other public transportation are, that mandate is a federal mandate. So the federal government isn't powerless to require vaccinations and mask wearing, but the power is not unlimited. They can't require, as we've just discussed, private employers to take action, but they can require, with respect to their employees, that vaccinations or mask wearing be done.
So the it looks like that this gets back to the whole, whether you're working for a so-called private employer or Uncle Sam. Isn't that kind of what the defining line is on this?
For the time being, yeah. With the exception of private employers who receive federal benefits. Healthcare workers,
right.
for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's another case that I found interesting, and this one is out of Pennsylvania, where a worker was fired because she tested positive for COVID-19. That's her claim.
Mm-hmm.
The federal court in Pennsylvania refused to dismiss her lawsuit, which alleges that her employer violated the ADA, or the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we've talked about that. An employer is required to provide reasonable accommodation.
Yes.
For employees who have religious objections or have medical disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular case, again, out of Pennsylvania, a worker claimed that on the same day that she notified her employer that she tested positive for COVID, she got fired. And so she brought a discrimination claim.
Mm-hmm.
So we can see that nationwide, literally from Pennsylvania to California, there is litigation arising as a result of this pandemic, and very interesting and unique legal issues are being argued on both sides.
Yep.
It's fascinating.
And it will, the snowball will continue to roll down the hill with COVID-related cases.
I think so. I was listening to Dr. Gottlieb over the weekend. He said that he believes only 1 in 10 cases are actually being reported.
Yeah, I heard that.
So that means it's underreported by a magnitude of 10. That is incredible. It's mind-blowing.
It really is. Don Luce, thank you very much, Don.
Thanks, Bill.
Don's the author of Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. That will wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of attorney Don Luce and Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, I'm Bill Buckmaster. Hope you have a great afternoon.